right, yeah. We'll be in touch. All right, welcome to the Debrief with Dave O'Neill. I'm here with an absolute comedy legend.
It's too early to say that.
Luke McGregor.
Hi, mate. How are you?
No, I'm good. We've just done
a whole gig together.
So, done a gig together. And we sort of know each other. We've known each other for I'm trying to remember. We just did the Grand View anyway, which is the room I'm trying to remember when I first met you. I do this on this podcast. Sometimes I have a really clear idea.
I can't remember. Seals and I talk about this sometimes as well. Cilly Bacall, another good comedy legend.
No, I remember where I met her. Someone nearly hit me. I met you with Cambo, John Campbell.
Oh, really?
I reckon you were with him.
Probably.
Or maybe I'm just blurring. I would have met you at a comedy room in Melbourne. I didn't meet you in Tasmania.
We would have definitely met at a comedy room as opposed to a shop or martial arts tournament.
Look, I remember you being very friendly.
I try and keep that lie going. That I'm a nice person.
But you weren't like one of those overly confident young comics.
Oh shit, no. Well, I'm still not. I'm still searching for that confidence to kick in.
Because people go, oh, Luke, is that like an act? I said, no, he's really like that.
Yeah, unfortunately.
He's like that. Well, but it's your persona on stage, isn't it?
Yeah, well, people say it's a persona, but it is. I guess it's exaggerated too. I don't know, not really. Basically, I get nervous when I go on stage, and then I just don't try and hide it. Whereas if I'm talking to someone at a party, I will try and cover my anxiety a little, just so I can function in a conversation.
Yeah. Were you always awkward like that, or?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know if anyone listening can hear it, but I'm wearing a retainer, and this is my first day with it because I had a tooth out.
Yeah, you said that on stage.
Yeah, no, I got certain words. I can't say words very well. It's hard to say certain S's and...
Yeah. What tooth did you have out?
I had a, like, not a front one, but really close to the front. So if I smile, you can see it.
Down the top or the bottom?
Top. Because I had a root canal when I was 10.
Yeah. Oh, my... You had a root canal when you were...
No, 11, sorry.
Man, and you must have been eating some serious lollies.
I don't know what happened. But I blame my parents for that. That tooth was supposed to be temporary, so I'm just getting it. I know I'm only getting a new one in now, but I have to wear this retainer for 6 months.
Oh my god!
So I've cancelled all my kissing competitions and
dates.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, yeah, because I had a tooth pulled out because I had a root canal, and then it just went. When I went to the dentist, I hadn't been for a while, and he goes, "Do you eat lollies and drink soft drink?" I'm like, "Wow, are you like a psychic or what?" I'm a dentist. And yeah, so I had, because of bad habits, I had a, but the way they pull it out is quite brutal, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I didn't know you have to floss every day. I always thought flossing was an optional thing that people who really care do.
Wow.
But you have to because your teeth rot inside your gums.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh man, so now I floss every day.
Well, that's good if I don't floss every day.
Man, the first couple of times was a massive pain in the butt. And now it's just like, even when I'm drunk, I'll do it. Although it hurts quite a lot if I muck
really?
It up. Yeah. I've drunk floss before, it's not a great idea.
So did he get pliers and just basically pull it out?
Pretty much, yeah. And it was painful.
Oh, was it?
I had the needle, but I still felt it. It didn't hurt.
Oh my god!
Horribly, but it was it was hurt. No money from the tooth fairy.
Keep the tooth either.
In fact, it cost me quite a lot of money.
Yeah. You know, I just had a flash. My partner read out this fact the other day. They've worked out that redheads don't react to anesthesia very well.
No, I heard we need like 20% more or something.
Yes.
But I wish someone would have told the dentist that, because I'm gonna bring that article, print it out to everything I go to from now on that involves needles.
It's true. It's a fact, apparently.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a useful superpower. I don't know if that's going to come in handy. I guess if someone... I don't know if someone if someone tries to chloroform me, to kidnap me, maybe they need to put in 20% more on the cloth or whatever.
He's not knocked out, boss. I don't know what's
happening. He's still got 20% left in him, and it's just enough to get away.
Bloody redheads. Get the other guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's useful in any way.
No, well, it's something, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's something. And you've just finished Rosehaven series number 3.
Yeah, we're still editing.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's good. We've got a pig in the first episode.
Pigs are always funny. Were they hard to control though?
No, it was like a dog. But it did. It was like a halfway between a dog and a cat in its behaviour, and that it just sort of it would listen, but then it would kind of do what it wanted to do.
Right.
To know Sils and I pretty well, and at one point it felt comfortable enough that it rested its head on my shoulder while I was sitting in the car.
Was it a little pig?
It was maybe double the size of Babe.
Yeah, okay. Did it have the
reasonably big pig?
The classic animal handler.
No, we had two. It was from an animal this place called Brightside Animal Sanctuary, and so they came on set and they were amazing. And we had a vet.
Oh, okay.
But we this pig rested its head on my shoulder, and I went, oh. And as I opened my mouth, the pig sneezed right in my mouth.
And yeah, pig flu.
I was running around, screaming.
Those guys that handle animals, they're a breed of their own. They have this thing called the zoo comes to you in kinders and schools.
Oh, right.
And this dude just turns up with cages with possums and stuff in them.
He just lets them rip for it.
Yeah, and this one that I went to when my son was in kinder, he's like, this is like a crocodile. I got a crocodile. And he had like an elastic band around his snout to stop him snapping. And some kid goes, how sharp are his teeth? Really sharp. And he ran his finger along it, and then he drew blood. Oh, and then the crocodile started going to a frenzy, and the lucker band broke, and he's like,
oh, shit.
Yeah, it's pretty. There's no crocodiles, though, in your. No, there's not. Just pigs.
Not until next season. Did you ever watch Croc College? It's like Australian Idol for people who wanted to handle crocodiles.
Oh, no, I never did.
Oh, my God, it was so... It's still one of my favourite shows to this day. It's
Croc College?
Amazing, yeah.
No.
I'm happy to go on podcast just to plug Croc College.
Croc College? It must be a...
6-part ABC show, I think it was.
Oh!
And I absolutely fucking loved it. It was so good. Oh, sorry, is there swears on your podcast?
Yeah, you can swear. Yeah, people do swear.
It was so good.
When you go to Tasmania, is it intense? Because you're from Tasmania. Do your parents turn up, like, to have a look? And you have to show your cousin around, or...?
To show the...
they get excited that you're in Tasmania filming.
Oh, Rosehaven, sorry. I thought you meant a gigs. Yeah.
Well, that gigs too, but doing a TV show is even more intense.
I invite them to come along, because my mum and dad are pretty sparing in the praise. They don't...
Oh, okay.
They will tell me, they text me and say, hey, just so you know, we're watching Rosehaven tonight. But then I never get a follow-up text with what they thought of it. And so I'll ask them later.
That's like when you see a tweet, it's like, going to see Luke McGregor tonight, going to be awesome. Then after the gig, nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. Like, you got to follow it up, lady. I'm following you. A favourite did you tweet? I care. It's hard. So I've told them, I said, you can either text me that you're going to watch it and then send a follow-up text, or don't text me. I don't want the text to say I'm watching it and then no follow-up text. Because then I asked them at Christmas, you never sent me a text, what you thought? And then they go, of what? Rosehaven. Oh, it was good. I'm like, all right. Upward inflection. Yeah.
But surely, do they get fame in their community that they're your dad's a real estate agent, isn't he?
Yeah, they have... Apparently,
so surely you'd be using that to do a bit of business.
I'm not sure. Apparently, sometimes they get someone just come into the office and have a just look at it and go, oh, yes, this is...
Oh, so is that the set?
No. It's my parents' office.
Right.
But they'll just go in because it's...
Luke McGregor's dad's...
Parents' office. It's weird. So that... because people go to the Rosehaven office and take a photo, but there's been like maybe two people who've... Because they have the Rosehaven poster on the window.
Oh, wow. And they go, oh, this must be Luke McGregor's mum and dad's office. And they go in and they see your mum or dad and go, are you...
and they just walk out again.
Luke McGregor's mum and dad?
But no, I think I'm... I don't think I'm well known enough to warrant... it hasn't really changed things.
No, okay.
They don't really get asked that much, I don't think. I think dad occasionally says, my son can MC a gig for I can get your mates rates.
And they're the worst gigs
horrible.
Do.
They're always horrible. And your parents always ask, like, they're doing you a favour?
Yes. Oh, no, I've done gigs with my parents. I did my nana's church auxiliary.
Oh, nice.
Which was
the big one.
There was a woman playing the piano, like, roll at the barrel, did it. And they're all old at church. Yeah. And I was very inexperienced too. I've been doing comedy like 2 years.
Oh, brutal.
It was brutal.
Yeah, I and I hate bumming in front of my parents because as soon as as soon as I do though, like I remember the first mum actually used to walk out halfway through my gigs when I started. She wouldn't stay for the whole thing. She'd just walk out because she was felt too nervous for me. So yeah. Sometimes she'd walk out just as I was walking on. Other times she'd leave during the set if it wasn't going well. It was brutal. I'm like, Mum, I can see you leave. Yes. You can't. You just got to stay for the gig. Either don't come or stay for the whole thing.
Was that in Tasmania? Was
yeah,
you do that?
Teddy. And because in Tassie, at least when I started, you have to write new material every time. So we were
yeah, because there's only a few rooms.
Yeah,
isn't there?
So at the time there was only really one, and so we were gigging, and just coming up with new every time. And you know what it's like with new, you have to bomb a couple of times before you really get it in, get it right.
Of course, and that's why I do the room you've just done, the Grandview. I host every week.
Yeah,
and I do new stuff, and it's and also, but it's been great for developing material.
I was going to say, you get a new show every year out of it, pretty much.
If I worked harder.
How much time do you spend writing for the next?
Not enough.
A little bit in the pub before you get off.
Yeah. Seriously, I was on my phone today, and my partner's going, "You spend too much time on your phone." I said, "I'm trying to work out jokes."
Yeah.
And then her mother, who's a big fan of mine, goes, "Yeah, he's got to get it right in his head, when he stands up for me." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm trying to." Because this is, I talk about this, I was talking to Dave Hughes about this today, about, he said there's a comic, I can't remember who it was, who sits down every day and writes. And he goes, I said, "Yeah, Jerry Seinfeld does that." And he's like, "Yeah, but we should all be doing it." And it's true, we should, but I don't do it enough.
Yeah, I heard Jerry does it
like an office job.
Yeah, which is a good idea. I did try and do that for a little while, but it's...
It didn't work?
Oh, it does. It does work, but I just... life gets in the way and I play video games and you don't do it.
Yeah, play video games. See, I don't play video games, but I'll clean up a house or have you been to this chicken shop, Super Tasty Rooster?
Yeah.
Are you a fan of chicken?
Man, I had it tonight.
Oh, you had it tonight?
I had half chicken and chips with gravy.
Oh, it's a good chicken shop.
Because I got this sort of kind of, it's hard for me to speak at the moment. I said,
because you're thin.
I said half chicken tip. And he got me half a chicken, and then I said no, I went. I had to revise my order, but it was. I love that place.
It is a good chicken shop.
Yeah,
it's an excellent chicken shop. But you must be a healthy eater though.
No, because
you're not fat.
No, I measured it the other day because I wanted to start a get fit program, and I'm 25.4% body fat, I think, or something like that. And anything over 25 is a problem.
Yeah, right.
Average, I think, I'm making these. I can't remember the numbers, but like really healthy is like 15 and below. And
yeah, right.
Average is between, I think, 15 and 25, and 25 and over. And I'm over 25 now.
Have you done the BMI thing? I did that today.
Is it the body mass index?
Yes.
But that's all over the place, isn't it? Because it's if you're a really muscly guy, or then you're still going to be over BMI.
Well, neither of us are big muscly guys.
No, but I'm not. I don't eat that healthy. I've been trying to. What's the fittest you've ever been in your whole life, do you think?
Probably in my 20s. When I met my partner, I weighed 88 kilos. So to put that in perspective, I weigh like 104 now, and. Yeah, probably in my 20s, because I was swimming and I used to go swimming. I used to swim laps. And then
so have you ever had a period in your life when you had a six pack?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
No, I've never. No, I've got a twin brother who's skinnier than you and lives in Switzerland and eats muesli for lunch.
Oh,
so
wow.
I can't. So I don't have that excuse of saying, "Oh, I come from a fat family. I've got big bones." He is like, and as Brad Oakes, who's been on the show many times, pointed out the other day, he looks like he goes to the gym every day, because he was looking at photos of him. And then I asked him, "Do you go to the gym?" He goes, "Yeah, I go to the gym every day."
Yeah.
So he runs, he goes to the gym, and he doesn't really eat bad food. Because you know what I did today? I looked up the death clock, where you put in your BMI and your age, your weight.
Yeah.
And if you smoke and drink and how much you smoke and drink. And it tells you how long you're going to live for.
Bloody hell, huh?
And then
the death clock.
The death clock.
Is it got a skull or something? Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then you can actually buy a death clock and put it by the side of your bed.
Oh my
God. I'm going to get one, and then so I'm going to live till another 30 years till I'm 83.
You're killing it.
I'm killing it.
83 is great.
Well, my dad's my dad must be 83 or 84, yeah. And he was fit until about 10 years ago. He never drank, he never smoked, and he really didn't eat bad food much. He was very... He never ran or anything, but he always was bloody... He was a scout lead. He was always kayaking or...
So did 10 years ago, something happened, or did he just...
No, he said, fuck it, I think.
I think once I got to about 75, I'd be like, I'm going to start having some donuts.
Yeah, he just sort of...
I'd definitely do all the drugs, surely.
Oh, yeah. Well, he started eating out more, actually, because Mum's like, I don't want to... She's cooked, like, for years.
Yeah.
And then he just... They eat out a lot. Like, they go to the RSL, they go to the pub, and it's always... Oh, I go, what did you have? Oh, we had, fish and chips, and I had a parma. So it's all cooked in fat.
If a gym could somehow... Like, if I could have a day in, like, the perfect body and go, wow, this is amazing. I can jump really high, I can run really far, I'm not getting tired... Then I'd probably be more inclined to get fit, but it's this sort of
repetition.
Just like being able to feel what it feels like to be super fit for once.
Yeah, because I heard a podcast.
I don't know what fit being super fit feels like. So yeah. I don't really know what goal. So to go for 3-6 months to the gym every day, I don't really know what I'm chasing.
Right.
I don't know what the prize is.
I heard you on, must have been Adam Zwar's podcast, 10 Questions. And you were talking about getting fit. You're really trying. That must have been a few years ago.
Oh, I talk about it a lot, but I haven't. Gideon, the comedy festival.
Yes.
I had a bit bet with him once that if I got a six pack, if I didn't have a six pack by the time the festival rolled around, I'd give him $100. And I didn't have a six pack.
So you gave him $100.
I gave him $100. I don't even know if he accepted. He said, no, you just go get a six pack. So he was very supportive. But I'm pretty sure I'd get in $100.
Yeah, but what would be the point of having a six pack? Then you'd have to take your shirt off to show people.
Well, that's what I do. I do it all the time. Because as you know, my housemates Tommy Little, and
he'd have a six pack.
He does have a six pack, and I'm pretty sure whenever he pulls his jumper off, I'm always very conscious of making sure my shirt stays down when he's.
But so how does he work on his body?
Tommy's taking jumpers off all the time, and his shirt just rolls up. There's the body, rolls back down. He's doing it on purpose. No one's that hot.
How much does he work on his body?
Oh, Tommy does something pretty much every day, even if it's just half an hour of a run or something.
Right.
He's always doing something, and it's not necessarily that he's got that good a diet, but he's just always chipping away at the gym, and his diet's pretty good.
Yeah.
So it's enough to maintain a good bod.
I think if you get to that level, there's a motivation to stay at that level. It's harder when you're fat and you're just like, well, I might as well just have those chips because I'm not going to be Tommy Little.
Well, do you want to start coaching each other day? We could make a pact 6 months from now.
Yeah, well...
Take before and after photos.
I should lose weight. You know when I lost all the weight? When I broke my leg. Man, I couldn't eat anything.
But if you're 83 on the death clock...
I'm going to be 83, yeah.
That's what I mean, like...
How much older do you want to get?
How much more do you want to be around for?
My dad's still very active, so he could easily live another good 10 years at least, having a good standard of life.
Well, Mrs. Marsh in our in Rosehaven is Nola must be
the actress.
I think she's around. She's in her 80s.
Oh, she's very funny.
And she's hilarious, and she's really switched on. I guess as technology gets better. Maybe we can get some bionic limbs or something.
Some robotic limbs. Oh, my God. And so why did you get into comedy? Because you've got, like, what they call funny bones. So you're a funny person.
Thank you.
You're a naturally funny person. But it would have taken a while, correct me if I'm wrong, for you to be funny on stage. It would take a while to tap into that you do now.
I had a run where I was... I had a really good time the first gig, and then the second gig I got a lot of laughs again, and then the third gig, and then maybe for 10 gigs after that I just bombed. I couldn't work out why.
Because I
suddenly had to start putting together material, and the this is my first gig wore off.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then I started to bomb badly. And then I slowly started to...
Get better again.
Yeah, almost to the point where I've been chasing that first gig.
Yeah.
Ever since.
Yeah, right. Was the material different or...?
No, I just... I didn't care because I'd never done comedy before, and so it was just a fun thing to try. I was drunk. Someone had pulled out of Raw Comedy.
That's right. You were in Raw. Yeah.
So I was. I'd had a bit to drink, and someone didn't show up. So I said, "Could I take their place?" Because my housemate had entered, and I knew I'd always liked making people laugh in social situations.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that first gig, I didn't care at all because. There were no stakes, I guess. Didn't matter if I didn't go well because I just didn't do it again.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But after that, I started to care. And then I became... it stopped being as fun. And it's taken me years and years and years to get back to the point where I do care, but I'm just as relaxed as when I first
That's a secret. That's what someone said. You've got to look like you don't give a fuck, but you really do.
But you do. Because you do, you know. And you're amazing at it. You look relaxed whenever you're on stage.
Yeah.
And you look like you're enjoying yourself.
Yes. I pretend.
Yeah.
But generally, I do enjoy myself. It's going well. It's enjoyable.
Yeah, it's but you have a I've seen you turn rooms around that other people haven't gone well in because you give off a vibe of this is fun.
Yes.
So the audience follows your lead.
Yeah, yeah. I've learnt that over the years.
Yeah.
I would go to gigs and get angry on stage occasionally, and it just never works.
Yeah.
It never, you know. I mean, you know, there's a lot of those bad gigs that will make you angry. But yeah, I just pretend I'm having a good time, even if it's not that great.
Yeah, it's I remember Tom Bella did something that I laughed my ass off at. He was doing this bit of material that every time I've seen him do it, it kills. And it was a really tough crowd, and the crowd weren't laughing. And Tom Bella at the end of the joke goes, "You know what? Sometimes you're wrong."
Yeah.
so good.
That's a great thing.
Oh, so good.
Because I remember when I met you, you were still working in a day job. You had a finance job.
Yeah, I had a job in superannuation.
That's right.
I was working at a call centre when I first came to Melbourne.
You had your super job when I met you.
Yeah.
And you were talking about quitting and stuff, giving it up. And you were asking, at what point do you give up your job?
Yeah. And I don't know the answer to that. I think as soon as you're not enjoying it anymore and you're...
Well, you've got to be doing enough in comedy or at least earning some to quit your job.
I wasn't at the time. I was earning less than $5,000 a year in comedy.
Yeah, wow.
And, but I knew if I didn't quit now, I never would.
Yeah, okay.
And,
take the plunge.
And I got lucky. I got Utopia not long after that.
Oh, wow.
But there was a period there for about 6 months where I wasn't working and didn't have any money coming in. And I was absolutely... I thought I'd absolutely done the wrong thing.
Is that where... Someone told me that you would turn up to do Utopia in your suit and you'd see people from your old job?
Yeah, because when I quit, I said I'm going to do comedy, and then Utopia, because Working Dog is so secretive, I couldn't tell anyone what I was doing. So they would see me show up... Because Utopia filmed in the building across the road from where I used to work. So I would show up at Utopia set... And I'd be walking around with a lunch break in with the same clothes.
Yeah,
clothes I used to wear. And like and I'm like, well, they go, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm filming something." They go, "Bullshit! You just got a fucking jump across the road."
That's a great story.
It wasn't until Utopia came out that they started to believe me.
Hang on a minute, he was telling the truth.
It was.
Oh, that's very funny.
Yeah.
You're on the debrief with Luke McGregor. Comedy legend, Rose Haven's coming out soon, next year.
2 years later, we recorded this.
Yeah.
It's been a 2 year break.
So, you've done like a documentary series, Lukewarm Sex, which was very funny.
Oh, thank you, mate.
You're an accomplished stand up and you've done a sitcom. What else would you like to do in comedy? I mean, that's pretty, for most comics, that's a pretty good, that's already a lot of good things, isn't it? That you've done.
Yeah, I always feel bad on podcasts because I haven't asked you any questions.
Don't worry about it. You haven't asked me questions.
The next thing I'd like to do is write a movie and get a movie up on the big screen.
Yeah, with you in it?
Doesn't have to be. I mean, if I write something that... at the moment, I'm writing something that's potentially got me in it, but I'm not...
Sure.
What I really would just want to do is write something and see it on the screen. Whether I'm in it or not is... it would be like a bonus goal.
Yes.
I'd love to get a... I've always...
Well, it's definitely a path there. I mean, you know, Damien Callaghan's got The Merger coming out very soon.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Mick Molloy, Tony Martin, all these guys did movies.
Yeah, and it's, you know, Working Dog and all those. Yeah. It's, yeah, it would be.
I was in The Nugget.
Yes.
Underrated.
Oh, it's a.
I don't know. What, anyway, it was a good movie. Good, it's good fun making a movie.
I haven't seen it, but I'm going to watch it as soon as you. As soon as I get home, I'm going to watch it. but yeah, that would be the. That would be the dream, I think, is to. Because what's your next one? Because you've.
No, you've done all of it. Now. No, I've written movies, but they weren't that successful. But I've certainly been through the experience was great. Wrote Takeaway with Mark O'Toole and you and your stupid mate.
Do you get a lot of
money? Yes,
money notes like to make changes and stuff. Or you got a bit of fairly creative freedom
back then. No, we got a lot of creative freedom, and they employ script guys to do an appraisal of your script. But they were generally, though, like the guy that did ours was Max Dan, by memory, who wrote Brides of Christ, and he was like a legend in drama, comedy kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was very complimentary.
Great.
And so he said, just do, yeah, that's all good. I reckon it's all good. And then, no, like all the funding bodies and that put in their 2 cents, but it was pretty good.
Yeah, great.
So, but...
That would be the dream for me, I think. If I get a horror film or something.
Oh, yeah, horror film would be great. I just love You're a big it. Fan of them.
Well, I so get...
That, you know, that's hard. If you're a fan of that genre and you know that genre, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, and I get scared a lot in real life. I'm ready. I'm ready to put that into a... ready to get on-screen therapy.
What's the one that the guy from Peele and Thingo did? I saw that the other day. Get Out?
Get Out.
That's very good. Yeah. Did you like that?
I love Get Out, yeah.
How good's that?
I really loved Get Out, and I really loved... I don't know if you've seen Cabin in the Woods.
No, is that good?
Cabin in the Woods is amazing. It sort of takes a bunch of horror tropes and then turns them on their head later.
I didn't watch them a lot. I was too scared of them as a kid to watch them, and a teenager. I've seen Evil Dead.
And
I've seen Scream.
It Follows is really good as well. It Follows is a one about this sexually transmitted demon. And it sounds bonkers, but it's really good and really intense.
I knew Lee Winnell. Like, he used to come on Triple R when I was on Triple R and do the movie reviews. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to do this horror movie. Like, oh, yeah, whatever, mate. And then he became like this, him and his mate, James, they became this worldwide phenomenon with Saw.
Oh, that was incredible. Saw and the first Paranormal Activity. I think Paranormal Activity, made for like 30 grand or something.
That's scary.
And it went... crazy.
I like Scream. I thought Scream was great.
Yeah, Scream used to be like a thing that my friends and I would go and do. We'd all go to the pictures when Scream came out.
Oh, really?
Haven't had something like that in a while, but
write a horror comedy would be great.
But
you seen American Werewolf in London?
I haven't.
John Landis. I think that's a great comedy horror sort of genre film.
And Get Out was cool too, because it was kind of horror and kind of something else. It was and it did a lot of cool things with the like taking something that was taking like a mundane situation but then putting you on edge, like when that guy ran towards him and then ran to the right.
Yes,
just stuff like that where it's just like it makes you uneasy. But if that happened to you in real life, if someone was running at you and then ran away, you would just get on with your life. I love any film where something quite strange happens, but not big enough that you're able to act on it in the moment. Because if a horror film, if blood starts dripping down your walls, you run out of the house.
Yes.
But if a door just opens and closes a couple of times,
or that guy runs at you, you go, well, that's a bit weird.
Well, that was a bit weird, but I'm not going to. Yeah, I'm not going to move. I'm not going to move out. I really love stuff like that.
Did you pick the twist in it? Like,
I don't.
I didn't pick the twist.
Think so, no. No. Didn't
I? Then again, I watched Sixth Sense. I think that's an incredible movie.
I missed that. And now, obviously, it's been spoiled. But I still want to see it.
It's a great movie.
I heard it's so good.
I didn't know the twist of that at all. I had no idea.
Well, I loved Unbreakable that he did.
Oh, Unbreakable's great.
And have you seen the follow-up?
I have.
And now he's making a bloody trilogy. Have you seen the trailer for the new one?
No, I haven't.
All right, watch the trailer. It's really cool.
His movie's M. Shyamalan, or is that? Yeah,
Night Shyamalan? Yeah.
Except he did that one where the wind was killing people, which is no good.
I didn't see that.
Oh, no.
He had some stinkers, didn't he?
Yeah.
But then he started to come back with that. He had that one about an elevator. He wrote one about an elevator lift or something.
He didn't have ones that you wouldn't have heard of. That's the thing with those guys.
Yeah.
Now, I ask these questions to everyone, so these are the debrief questions I'm going to ask you right now.
Oh, you go.
Okay, what went well tonight and why, you reckon, in your gig?
The gig, what went well? Arrogant. I did some stuff that was just me talking about what happened.
Yeah, you did.
Recently, like that night, and it worked, which...
That's always good.
And I opened with that, which is probably not a good idea, but I just felt like talking about that stuff. And it worked, which is nice, because sometimes I've done it in the past and it hasn't worked at all.
Well, you know, Dave Hughes has this theory that he often does something topical of the day first because it sets up that, hey, this stuff, I'm just making this stuff up on the spot.
Yeah, that's true.
And
yeah.
Also, why not try it there when they're all, like, cheering and clapping for you?
Yeah, and you kind of... There's almost like there's this little window of...
about 5 minutes, I reckon.
You can get away with it.
Yeah.
And because you've got all your material coming.
Yes.
So you can sort of sneak it in there and then get on with the jokes.
Yeah.
Or just, if it doesn't work, go... Anyway, sorry, that's nothing.
Yeah, just...
Here's my real stuff.
Just mucking around.
Just mucking around, guys.
Just mucking around, guys.
We'll start it. I'll come on stage again.
Bit of small talk at the front. It's actually a good policy.
Yeah.
And what didn't go well, if anything didn't go well?
I started to get self-conscious. One joke I did normally gets a laugh in a certain bit and it didn't.
Oh, yeah. I hate that one.
And it threw me out for the next bit. So rather than just push on and go, that's fine, I got a little bit self-conscious. And also the walking signal.
That was through me. Yeah, you can hear the signals outside.
And it threw me, but...
Are you aware of, a little bit more than most people aware of, someone was telling me that you didn't like performing in the tent in Adelaide? Because they are noisy, those tents.
No, I didn't mind that. The only time it got hard was, and this wasn't Adelaide's fault, just one of the mics blew out. So I was just yelling the whole gig, and most of my stuff is me being, you know,
quiet.
Nervous or a little bit...
Yeah, quieter.
And, so I was just trying to do these jokes about being, you know, nervous and anxious, but I was yelling at a whole crowd of people in the tent, so I didn't quite, the juxtaposition wasn't quite
good. It work. But, yeah, no, but you can, when you're on stage at the Grandview Hotel, you can hear that often happens to me, you can hear, you're like, oh,
yeah,
God.
Oh, yeah. But no, Adelaide's good. The first time, I think it's important in comedy to perform in different types of venues.
Yeah.
Because you get so used to one thing.
Yeah, it's true.
And then that throws out and you think, oh, all of a sudden this joke doesn't work. But it should. It should work whether there's a roof on the venue or not.
Yes.
Or whether you're whether it's got walls or material.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. But if you're definitely in a confined space, it's better.
Dark room,
low ceiling.
Roof.
Yeah.
Not outside on the beach.
Yeah.
Helps a hell of a lot.
Oh, yeah. We've all done... I don't think I've done outside on the beach, but just outside in general is not good.
I did a beach gig once and I had to go to the toilet midway through the gig. and so I literally brought a cordless mic with me to the back of the porta potty.
Right.
And then just apologised to the crowd and said, I'm so sorry about this. I don't know what to do, guys.
Sort of situation? Was that a music festival?
No, it was me doing a one-hour show in Perth. Outside on the beach.
What was it like?
We're just busting out the toilet right off the bat. What was the actual gig like?
Yeah.
Good. People actually thought the toilet was part of the act.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
But then afterwards I was saying, oh, no, I actually had to go to the toilet. I'm so sorry.
Oh, man. I haven't done that, but I've been like, I've felt like that. Like, especially if you're a little bit sick or something.
Have you ever been in the toilet when someone called you to go on stage?
Yes.
That was sad. That's brutal.
That's bad.
I did that at a uni gig and I was in the toilet and I came out and the MC was crossed, the crowd was crossed, and I bombed for 20 minutes.
Great. yeah, don't you love them? Were there any organisational hazards that got in the way tonight?
No, it was
pretty
fine.
Smooth,
they were,
really,
pretty
actually.
Pretty smooth.
Smooth.
I like that you got a keyboard on stage.
I don't really play.
I just love it. If there's a keyboard on the stage, you don't play keyboard.
You can hit it occasionally.
Because it could be any instrument, really, you know?
It could be. You're right. And it's on my ironing board.
It hasn't become a crutch either. You don't...
I don't take it to other gigs.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, at that gig, I sometimes play it when I do a bad joke and I just start hitting the keys. I can't really play keys. I should learn.
Sometimes when I'm learning new, if the joke doesn't get a look... me looking at the notepad with a weird look does.
Yeah.
The problem is that I end up with a 5-minute set that's all based on me bombing. And it's like, well, this is a whole waste of time. I can't continue this.
How do you develop new material? Do you do it in the rooms or do you do trial shows or do you a combination of both?
Both. But trial shows I find invaluable because it just forces you to have a...
Oh, yeah.
And especially because, you know, we do them at Token at the...
They've got a great little theatre space downstairs and in their offices.
If your management's in the room with a bunch of people, they organise for you. That really puts pressure on to write some stuff. So I find trial shows really useful. For that reason, in that if you feel like you're letting down someone else if you're not ready for them.
Yes.
Whereas if you just go to a gig, they're not paying you, and you've got to do five, it's just like... sometimes I write on the tram on the way there, and I'll be like, oh, whatever. So trial gigs are... good to have.
Yeah, you're right. They put the pressure on. And how can we do better next time? That's the last question.
Oh, man, nothing.
Nothing, exactly.
I had a good time when you've given me a lift home. I think the whole thing is...
overall, very good.
Overall, been a very pleasant experience.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast.
No worries, mate.
And keep your eyes out for Rosehaven. And Luke will be doing festivals next year, will you?
I don't know.
Yeah, because you've got so much work. Doing a sitcom is so full on, isn't it?
Well, it is, but if Rosehaven doesn't get a fourth season, I will just be unemployed next year. Yeah, right. But I kind of wouldn't mind that just to sort of push to do something else.
Yeah, right, sure.
Otherwise, I feel like I'm doing Rosehaven, and it's an awesome pattern that I'm, like, it's sort of, you know, what I dreamed of doing when I was working in a call centre.
Of course.
But it still feels like I'm stuck in a rut a little. I wouldn't mind maybe having Rosehaven and then maybe, I don't know, maybe trying to do something else in between.
Yeah, but get fit and do an action movie.
Get a six-pack.
Yeah.
Do an action film.
Thanks, Luke.
Oh, and you get fit too, so you can be in it. We can be buddy cops or something.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
But I can just be the fat cop, surely. Yeah. Just the fat bloke. Get Tommy Little as your mate. I'll be the boss.
We'll get Tommy to get fat.
Yeah.
So you can play the fat bloke and you and I will be the fit guys.
What happened to you, Dave? I'm getting fit. I'm in Luke McGregor's action movie.
Man, I'm going to cast you now, so you start getting fit.
Give me a year's run-up at least.
You might not get up.
And if not, I'll send my twin brother, but he doesn't really speak English that well anymore. I don't speak English on a daily basis, somebody says to me.
Okay.
I speak French.
All right, well, I can try and work that.
Transatlantic accent.
Well, it'll help it sell overseas.
Yeah, we'll get an overseas sale in Switzerland.
Yeah.
France, even. They speak French there. Luke McGregor, thanks again.
Thank you, buddy. Thanks for being in my movie.
Yes, no problem. I'm looking forward to it.